What's up? Welcome to the Confluence VC podcast. This podcast is meant to give you a personal glimpse into the next era of investors and operators. This week we had on Ali Jamal of First Check Ventures. First Check is one of the largest, most active syndicates on AngelList, and Ali is the founder and sole member of the team. Since launching in July of 2020, the group has already invested in 25 plus companies from around the world. In this talk, we discuss developing a product mindset and using that skill set to support portfolio companies, leveraging a massive syndicate LP base that can offer more value than traditional funds, and some thoughts around the massive influx of new syndicate leads, rolling funds, and new forms of capital. Cool. So Ali, we like to start these talks just by learning more about you and your background. If you could, in a couple minutes or less, who is Ali Jamal and how did you get to where you are today?
Sure. Thanks, Clay, for having me. So I'm based in Mexico City, but I originally grew up in the Midwest. I did my undergrad and master's at Stanford, and then I started my career as an investment banker in New York. I did M&A for 3 years, and then moved back to the Valley. I worked as a data scientist for 3 years. And then basically since 2013, I've been in product and mobile and in growth. I was a growth product manager at Zynga, the mobile gaming company. I then went to a competitor called RockU and helped build them from 40 people up to 400. And then in 2017, I got recruited by Agoda. I moved to Bangkok, Thailand to lead marketing innovation for them. I led their display marketing, their mobile growth, and then ended up all leading all their special projects and new initiatives. And that ended up to me basically becoming their marketing head for China and joining their China executive team. I did that for a couple of years. And then in 2019, I moved to Bogota, Colombia to lead performance marketing for Rappi. Ended up having a large team across all of LATAM doing acquisition and retention marketing. And then end of 2019, I got recruited by Clip. I moved to Mexico City, January of 2020. Clip is Mexico's largest fintech. We're actually Mexico's first fintech unicorn. And I lead their growth and performance marketing teams. So on the growth side, I've got product managers, designers, data scientists, all structured squads across the customer lifecycle. On the marketing side, I have teams that run all of our paid and unpaid user acquisition. We also have teams that do all of our SEO and organic traffic as well. And then on the side, I've been an angel investor for about 15 years, you know, made my first investments in front of startups, but over the last 4 or 5, it's kind of picked up into a more serious hobby and launched First Check Ventures, which is an angel syndicate last July. And I've been able to grow that over the last year and make, you know, several investments kind of across the globe, which has been really
interesting. Yeah, let's talk more about First Check. So I'm on the back of First Check right now. I love seeing that deal flow come through my inbox. I'd love to just learn a little bit more about initial thesis of the fund or the syndicate, sorry, and then how that's changed over the past year.
Yeah. So from a high level, I've been living abroad for 5 years. So I felt like a lot of these early stage startups in emerging markets are kind of being ignored by a lot of the larger VCs. At the same time, I saw a lot of companies actually become unicorns out of it, right? So when you look at Southeast Asia, you have the Gojeks and the Grabs. When you look at LATAM, you have the Nubanks and the Rappis, you know, even Africa with Jumia. So I felt like there was a lot of stuff happening that was just kind of being ignored. And there weren't as many people looking or thinking about these markets, but there's still a huge potential in them. And so the idea was, you know, finding some of these early stage startups globally that had the potential to, you know, become huge and trying to get in very early and with, you know, my Valley and global experience and especially kind of with the growth and product stuff that I can bring to the table, but, you know, more importantly, the syndicate as a whole can bring to the table, really trying to add a lot of value to these early stage startups. You know, we have great people in my syndicate, you know, not just you, although you're a great member, but you know, we have people from kind of all the major companies in the Valley. I have friends of mine from Stanford, the people that worked with me at places like Zynga or Agoda or Rappi. So there's this huge, powerful network of people that could be extremely helpful with introductions, with thought, and really wanting to make that impact. And being that first check, being that early supporter, I felt like that's when you can shape the biggest impact for these companies. And you know, also I think it has the most potential upside. So it kind of made sense on both sides. So that was kind of the initial thesis, and that's kind of continued to be what I'm seeing. I think one of the things that's been interesting is most of the syndicates tend to really rely on outside signals, and they need to have some strong big name VC, and they're trying to do a little bit later stage deals. I've really been able to get a lot of interest, I think in pre-seed and in seed deals, even without, you know, a lead VC, because of the fact that they're in these kind of interesting markets that's, you know, you might not find people coming in at that level, but they might come in 6 months or a year. And so we're seeing a lot of interesting markups across our portfolio for companies that we invested in 6 months ago that I've now hit that point where a larger seed investor can come in.
That's awesome. You're kind of alluding to this in your last answer, but when you compare First Check to other groups, the number of people backing you stands out is one thing, just looking at a high level. I think last time I checked, it was around 1,800 LPs, 750 unique LPs have invested in the last 12 months. How have you managed to attract so many high quality backers, and how have you leveraged this massive backer list to support the companies you invest in?
Yeah, so, you know, I think I started out by reaching out to almost everybody I knew, and then reaching out again, and then, you know, sometimes a third or fourth time until people ended up joining. So part of it was just kind of my own initial massive outreach. And then, you know, I think, you know, it kind of became more of a viral thing where, you know, people got into a really cool deal. They would share about investing in a company or whatever on LinkedIn, or even just talk with their friends, and their friends would hear about it, you know, from a few different times. And I think one of the coolest things, I had a lot of people who weren't angel investors before who have now become extremely passionate about it. You know, and people that have gone from not having made an angel investment at all, you know, last year or before last year, to now having made, you know, 10, 12, 15 investments in the last 6 months or 8 months. So, you know, I think that's been a big thing for me, is really trying to introduce more first-time angels and really getting people to look at this as a asset class. Especially, there's so many people that I know that worked in tech, you know, that were just never invited to the, you know, angel investor table, right? So if you're in being able to show them some of the opportunities that I'm seeing, and obviously, you know, we might not be able to write the 100K check individually, but if we pool our resources together, these people that have this great tech background are really able to understand the products that are working and add a lot of value and insight to them as well. So I think it's been really, really cool.
That's great. I guess switching gears a bit, but you have an extensive background just in building and shaping products. What's been the biggest advantage of this developed skill set as an investor, whether it's through evaluating companies, helping them scale up to find their next phase of growth? Just interested in how you've leveraged that background as an investor.
Yeah, I think it's been valuable kind of across the board. So it's definitely been valuable helping to understand customers, helping to understand, you know, what their retention metrics are, what their growth metrics are, how easy it's going to be for these companies to scale. Also, just, you know, walking the founders through some of the basic you know, product and growth techniques about their user journey and where they might want to focus on improvement, you know, especially as they're building out that next level. So I think it's been a lot of stuff on the product side, but also just a lot of stuff on the growth side and being able to help out with how to think about marketing and how to think about growing the product. And then also a lot of the help has been, I think, on the advisory side, at least on HR and hiring. You know, obviously I can't be a CMO for all of my portfolio companies, but I can help with their interview process on the product or the marketing side, and kind of help them think about what kind of people they want to hire and why they might want to hire a person with experience in this versus a person with experience in that.
Totally makes sense. It totally makes sense. I mean, I think it's just a really valuable skill set to bring to the table. I mean, we ask same question to a lot of other investors of like, how do they add value beyond the check? And I think that's really tangible skill set you can bring to each company you work with. All right, so moving on. Next question. We have, again, we ask this same question to a lot of other solo GPs, but what are some of the ways that you delegate responsibilities, whether it's writing memos, inviting LPs to deals, doing Q&A sessions, et cetera, in order to continue to move fast as a syndicate?
Yeah, so I haven't really been delegating. I've actually kind of liked the fact that I haven't been delegating. You know, for me personally, I want to be involved across these different processes. I want to get to know my LPs. I'm very involved with the portfolio companies. I try not to be, or at least you know, when I'm getting to know them and when we're thinking about making an investment, I try to be as helpful as possible. So I've found that, you know, if I'm getting that intimate interaction with the founders, then I'm usually the best person to write the memo. And I tend to make my memos more personal, I think, than other people, because it's not just a, you know, blank company at that point, right? It's my interpretation of what this company is and trying to share my reason or thesis for investing. And each time it might be, you know, a slightly different reason or something else that I saw. And so kind of giving people more of the context about why I'm so excited by these companies, I think, is important.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's different than the answer we've heard from some others that have just hired on or just brought on people part-time to kind of help scale some of their workload. But I do like the piece of just making it personal, interacting with the founders and doing the write-up yourself. I mean, I think that signals a lot of the conviction that you have in them. Last question here from just the core questions before we dive into the quick fire. But from your vantage point, are there too many syndicates, rolling funds, just new forms of capital available right now, and why?
So there's still you know, great potential startups that are being missed. So I don't know if there's enough, you know, syndicates or rolling funds or any of these forms of capital. I do think, you know, I think one of the things to think about is that it's probably very easy to set up a syndicate and very easy to set up a rolling fund. And so you don't necessarily know what kind of support you're really going to get. You know, if people haven't done a deal before, they don't always know what goes into it. And so, you know, I think there's something to be a little bit wary of about a first time, you know, syndicate leader and myself, you know, included in that, right? Like I made some, you know, initial mistakes or you know, made some decisions early that you know, if I'd had more experience, I might not have done. And so I think that's probably the bigger concern. And it's not that there's too many of them, but there's ones that aren't as experienced that don't know all the tips and tricks and aren't asking for help. And I think that's something to keep in mind, that there's a great pool of people that have done this before. And you know, we're all willing to help because we're also looking for great deals and want to get involved in great deals. And so, you know, feel free to reach out and ask, you know, other syndicates that you're a part of where you feel like there might be a thesis match, you know, for help or for support, because you know, like the more syndicate leads we have out there, the more opportunities there are. Right. And I like to tell people, like, look, I don't care or I care, but like if I end up investing in the next Uber, it doesn't really matter if it came from my syndicate or if it came from somebody else out there who looked for it and found it, right? Like when you have something that has that dramatic shift of a return, like we need more people out there trying to find those sorts of companies, trying to find that sort of potential. Just the way power laws work, the you know, potential with these things is so great that the more people we have out there looking for it, I think the more chance we have.
Couldn't agree more. And I think we could continue this conversation on for a while offline. I mean, running a syndicate ourselves, I feel like there's so many things we could learn. Like you've already done all the hard work of learning this stuff. I mean, we'd love to just pick your brain and figure out best ways to scale this thing going forward. But that was great. So that wraps up core questions. We'll move on to quick fire. So we do these at the end. We've got five questions meant to be answered in two sentences or less. First one we have is, what is a recommendation you hear regularly that you think is bad advice?
I think a lot of times people get told to raise for 2 or 3 years of run rate, and this is the cheapest your company's ever going to be. So don't raise for 2 or 3 years. You should raise less and raise more frequently. It's much faster to raise these days, especially with tools like, you know, syndicates and rolling funds. You can get a check in a matter of days or weeks if you're doing right, right? If you have good numbers. So I would make the bet on yourself, raise less and raise more frequently.
I like that. I like that a lot. In the last year, what new belief, behavior, habit has most improved your life?
You know, I think that the biggest thing has just been like getting on the call with most people. I think that a lot of people in general, right, are very kind of restrictive or guarded about their time. And you know, I get that, but I'm of the mindset that you never kind of know where synergies might come from or where great things might happen. So, you know, I'm of the belief that it makes sense to kind of just say yes and hop on and see what happens. So kind of having that, you know, improv mindset of yes and seeing where it takes you, you know, has always kind of been a part of my life, but even now more so when I'm looking at these companies and talking to these people, where before I might have been a little bit more guarded with my time on it. I think it's been a huge, huge benefit to hop on and hear more, and you start to, you know, you start to really see the difference between, you know, a great company and a good company and a mediocre company. It makes it that much quicker when you see a great one to pull the trigger and invest.
Yeah. I heard someone reframe just taking every meeting you can, just this maximizing your surface area, which is kind of like a good framework for me to think about it. But yeah, I've had the same experience. It's like you would never really know where opportunity lies unless you say yes to these meetings. So I agree with that. Next one, aside from having to say no all the time, what's the worst part about venture?
I think not knowing if you're actually good at this. This is really weird. Like, I think I'm good at it. Like, I have some great paper returns, but they're all on paper. You know, my portfolio companies have all gave positive, you know, comments, and I've been helping them out a lot, but, you know, maybe it's one of those things where I'm great at helping them from, you know, 0 to 1 or from, you know, 1 to 10, but am I, you know, the person that could continue to help them grow from 10 to 1,000 or 100,000 or whatever, you know, and without actually seeing their returns or whatever. So much of the stuff is just on paper. It's hard to really know how good you are or, you know, what I should get better at, right? So some of these companies where they haven't had an up round, you know, and I have had other companies that have, it's like easy to start, you know, being, to think that there's something wrong, but, you know, of course they haven't had an up round. It's only been 6 months or 9 months, right? So I think it's one of those things that it's hard to really figure out if you're doing well or not.
Yeah. Yeah, we've heard that same answer from a couple other people. I mean, it's frustrating, especially when you're early on in your career. You're making all these bets, like doing all this diligence on companies and like forming these views of the world that you just have no idea if they're going to be right or wrong. Like you own 5, 7, 10 years, but yeah, it's kind of frustrating. Okay, so two more questions here. First one is, best piece of feedback or advice for junior VCs or those aspiring to break into venture?
So I think one of the things that's really important to be a VC is having operating experience. I think it really helps you add value to the startups more than just money, right? Like that was one of the questions you asked before, is what do you do besides just money? And I think like I have a lot of ops and product and growth experience. That's what I'm bringing to the table. And so for other junior people, I think it's good to keep on building out your venture portfolio, like could you do angel investments on the side. But I don't think you should be a young person and have your dream of being in VC. I think your dream should be of helping the startup ecosystem and figuring out how that happens. And that could be through VC, that could be working in product or ops, right? There's a lot of different ways that you can help out. And so if you really want to, you know, end up, you know, being in VC, I think you need to try to help the ecosystem as much as you can, and that'll lead to positive things coming out of it.
Totally agree again. I love that. Last question we got, who is a mentor of yours that you'd want to give credit to?
I've had a bunch. You know, there's been a lot of great people who've kind of taught me all along the way about, you know, product and growth and just, you know, how to navigate this life. And then also on the syndicate side, right? So one of the ways that I learned is I was in syndicates, you know, over the last 5-6 years, making my own personal investments, you know, reading through other people's memos, reading through how they approach the world, understanding where my view of the world was the same or was different and why. You know, and then a lot of them were actually helpful and were offered to, you know, hop on calls with me or understand what I was looking at and kind of give me feedback. So there's been a lot of really amazing people that have helped me throughout my career. And I want to kind of thank all of them. And I feel like if I just started naming people, I'm sure I'd leave somebody off. And, but you know, there's a lot of great people out there and I really appreciate everybody.
Cool. Well, cool, man. That wraps it up for me. I think you answered all those questions great. I like having concise episodes that are really impactful and filled with tactical advice. I think you did just that. Well, awesome. Ollie, again, really appreciate you taking time and looking forward to sharing this with everybody this coming week.
Huge thanks again to Ollie for coming on this week, and we hope that each of you were able to pick up something valuable from this talk. If you're looking to get in touch with Ollie, we've linked his social info within the description below, and you can also find his contact info within the Confluence VC directory. For next steps, if you're an investor and have not already signed up to join, we encourage you to check out our website at www.confluence.vc to submit your info to become a member. If you have any feedback for us, please feel free to reach out directly either to Tyler@gpv.com or myself at clay@muckercapital.com. Hope to hear from y'all soon.